Hey then, welcome to Making Positive Psychology Work, the weekly podcast where we uncover tested practical ways to help people move from functioning to flourishing at work, so together we can better navigate the incredible challenges and opportunities our world faces. I'm your host, Michelle McQuaid, and what you probably don't know about me is that although I run almost every morning, it's only because of my strength of perseverance that I manage to shuffle my way through the 5Ks. Oh dear. Thank you so much for joining me for lesson number 59 of Making Positive Psychology Work. I'm so glad you're here because today we're talking to John Berghoff, who is the co-founder and managing partner of the Flourishing Leadership Institute and has designed and facilitated whole system change efforts through large group collaborative summits for the US Navy, the United Nations, and businesses and institutions of all sizes. His work on appreciative leadership, emotionally intelligent negotiating and influence has taken him to Australia, Japan, the UK, and South America. And he's leading the charge as the official design and facilitation partner for the fourth Global Forum for Business as an Agent of World Benefit with Professor David Cooper-Ryder. But what you probably don't know about John is that he once ran almost 400 miles in just 10 days. Welcome, John.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
I think your running style sounds far more natural and joyful than mine does, John. You'll have to give me some tips later.
Happy to.
Now, John, you recently did a wonderful TED Talk where you shared that what gets you out of bed each morning is the question about what it is that causes any human system, a team, a company, a community, to come alive, to be at our best, to play to our strengths, to innovate from everywhere, and to deepen our sense of purpose. So what exactly have you discovered so far unleashes this?
Well, it's a big question, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, it's a never-ending learning journey. In a nutshell, what I've discovered is that what we are capable of in our communities and organizations is almost miraculous, and our potential to shape our future is often beyond what we might think. And so we're just privileged and honored to be given a chance to be brought in to try and nurture that process along.
So I know one of the ways you found that we can shape some of that potential is using the appreciative inquiry method, and particularly in these large-scale organisation efforts or appreciative inquiry summits. So for those of us who maybe haven't yet encountered an appreciative inquiry summit, can you just explain what exactly is it?
Yeah, sometimes I witness it and I think, this is like a big magic trick. It's our mutual friend and colleague and hero, David Cooper-Ryder, created this approach many years ago. And the description I would give in a nutshell, an appreciative inquiry summit, is it's when a group of people, it could be in an organization or community or family of any type and any size, comes together to search for the best of either what has been, what is, or what could be within that system of people. So that's kind of a textbook answer, I guess. And, you know, what ends up unfolding every time is always its own unique expression of that particular community. But that's what how I'd describe it in a nutshell.
So I often talk about it as a strength-based approach to creating change. And I know you've been running an amazing certificate accrediting people in appreciative inquiry. Does that definition also stack up, or would you improve upon it?
Yeah, well, I think it's a strength-based approach to change in that it invites us both individually and in groups to connect to our strengths. And I think the other attribute that jumps out, and there's a number of principles that are often talked about that define the appreciative inquiry approach, but one of the big ones for me is the importance of the wholeness of that system or that community being represented, the willingness or the ability to bring in voices from as many places across that ecosystem as possible is something I would add to the fact that it's strength-based that makes it unique.
I think that's completely true. And I think you're right. It is like a big magic trick unfolding, because it's hard to imagine when you've got hundreds or even thousands of people right across a system together, you know, every stakeholder represented there in their voice, that you could possibly do any kind of effective planning with that many people in the room. So can you walk us through perhaps an example of a real world appreciative inquiry summit and what actually happens to make this magic trick come off?
Sure. I don't know that I fully understand how or why it works. I'll start by saying that. Why don't I give you a real example of a summit that we're running 3 days from now?
That would be perfect.
Yeah. So and this is an example that was born a year ago, and it's a story of a WISH organization. You mentioned my TED talk. I briefly touch on this story, but there was a WISH organization called the Front Row Foundation that I'm a big fan and supporter of, and they help individuals that are battling life-threatening conditions to experience the event of their dreams from the front row. And it creates not only a magical front row moment for that beneficiary, but even a moment that their family members can remember, oftentimes long after that beneficiary has passed away. So when I got a phone call from them a year ago, before they asked, I said, I'll do it. And they said, well, instead of us having our traditional annual board meeting of 7 to 10 board members, they said, we want to invite our entire community to come together to help us co-create the future of our WISH organization. And if you stop right there, you know, there's certain principles that are enacted through that request, the willingness to invite voices in that are not normally included helps to create that wholeness that I mentioned earlier. And I'll tell you the story of what happened at last year's summit. We had, instead of 6 to 10 board members, we had about 35 to 40 supporters that flew in voluntarily from all around the country. And together we had a series of conversations or dialogues. And we started by exploring what are the strengths of this WISH organization. You know, no matter how it evolves, what is it that we value that we want to keep? And some insights emerged that were really helpful for the charity. And then we had a visioning process where people broke into groups and they created creative representations of the future built upon the strengths that are currently there. And to make a long story a little bit longer, Michelle, I will tell you that particular summit was a high point for me, because what ended up unfolding was one of the groups created a vision of the future where they looked around the room and they said, well, many of us are entrepreneurs and we have skills and talents and strengths that we could offer to each other as a kind of a value exchange, an organic marketplace. And what if we created a window of time where we offered our services to each other and all of the financial fuel that generated went directly to the front row? And everyone liked that idea. And we all thought if this happened at some point in the future, that would be fantastic. And what we didn't realize is that literally not within months or weeks or days, but within hours, that evening, sitting on the back deck in my home around a fire pit, a group of us started offering up our skills and talents by way of this totally organic auction. And in a matter of a few hours, we raised over $100,000, which was beyond, you know, what any of us were expecting or planning for. And I just share that small little anecdotal story. It was a front row moment in my life. And to me, what that showed me is that when a community is given the gift, or an organization, a team of any kind, of being a part of the discussion around the future, that their level of commitment that is generated from that process, the buy-in, the enrollment, and the desire to make that future happen is so much higher. I don't know how to measure it, but it's so much faster and more efficient than any other way, than, you know, us sending the vision out and hoping people get it. So that was last year, and we're doing our second one in about 3 days. So we're imagining, you know, what'll happen to meet what happened last year.
I can't wait to hear what happens on the other side of that. And I agree. I think one of the incredible powers of an Appreciative Inquiry Summit is its ability to create commitment to change rather than just compliance to change, which, mm-hmm. of course, we know so many organizations struggle with and why so often change efforts tend to fail. So, you know, one of the other big Appreciative Inquiry Summit efforts you've been involved with for a number of years now is the work in the city of Cleveland and how it came together around this topic of creating a green city on a blue lake. So can you maybe walk us through, you know, again, I think that's such a challenging environment in Cleveland where, you know, the city mayor has been bringing together the whole system, such diverse stakeholders, so many voices in the room, but also doing it year after year now for a period of time to try and drive change. How practically do you make that work as the facilitator to be able to hold that space for people?
Yeah, well, I've got to say, I have so much admiration for the city of Cleveland, their sustainability department, and Mayor Frank Jackson for having the courage to do something this innovative. Because to invite the city to come into a room and to have hundreds of citizens where, you know, we've got a CEO of a local company sitting next to a student, sitting next to a teacher, sitting next to anyone who's interested in seeing a sustainably designed future for our city, you know, that's a radical situation. And I had the privilege for the first time, my peer and partner, David Cooperrider, really kicked off this initiative about 8 years ago, and I had the chance to come in to facilitate it last year, and it was beyond what I ever could have hoped for. It was amazing to see in one day a group of citizens who are all connected by a shared purpose. And if there's one big insight that I got to take away and have seen from the years that they've been putting on this summit, it's the power of a transcendent purpose to bring together such a diverse group in the face of opportunities and incredible challenges, but to witness when given the chance to vote with their feet and to get to choose projects and aspirations that they care about, and then just given a 5 minutes of training on design thinking, you know, that nobody there does this for a living, but then to see them to run with their ideas and to bring them to life in 2 and 3 dimensions and share them with each other, just amazing innovations have come out of those summits. But the big thing that gets me inspired is seeing the power of this beautiful purpose, this beautiful vision of a green city on a blue lake, and how that becomes an attractor. And I think David calls it mirror flourishing. It's the idea that when a system of people has a purpose, especially the kind of purpose that we might call sustainability as flourishing, like you said earlier, from functioning to flourishing, when we have a purpose where we're making the world a better place in an authentically sustainable way, people individually come alive because they see themselves as a part of that future. So that's been an amazing experience for us.
So I think that purpose piece, you're right, is so important in terms of, number one, we know what most people say they want from their jobs is a sense of meaning and purpose, more so than being paid more money or having job security or flexibility. And I think what an appreciative inquiry summit allows us to do is create that space where we can come together and co-create that purpose and what it's going to look like. So what though might an organization be able to use this around in terms of, is it just sort of that strategic planning? Do you only do it if you've got this bigger mission? Can you do it around smaller issues like new teams coming together or the like? When is an appreciative inquiry summit appropriate for an organization to use as a tool?
Yeah, that's a big question, an important question. In our perspective is that a large group appreciative inquiry summit has the potential within it to unleash, obviously, a lot of people at once towards something exciting. And as excited as we get to talk about and promote these large summits, I really think the big opportunity is for managers and leaders not just to think about that big summit, but to figure out how to use appreciative inquiry. And it's one of our big questions that we're asking, and it's what we're doing through our LEAF certification, where what we're doing is we're training managers and leaders to ask the question, how might I bring the principles and the philosophy of appreciative inquiry into our daily interactions, into our small convenings, not with 400 people, but with 4 or 10 or 30, because our experience and my background is in business as an executive is that we spend so much of our time in these meetings. And so there's so much leverage in a practical sense, if we can just learn how to bring the principles of AI in. I'll give you one simple example. Let's go back to that Sustainable Cleveland Summit. One of the things that we did at the beginning of the day, and this is an example of an activity and exercise that's practical that anybody could bring into quite literally any convening of people. It could be the dinner table with my family. It could be a boardroom meeting. It could be a cross-functional collaboration of any kind. But we start that summit by presenting the question, in that case to 400 people, but we do this with 5 people in a meeting. And the question is, why is being here important to you? And one of the things that we've learned through the work that we've done and so many of our teachers, many who you and I share in our respect and appreciation for what they've done in laying the groundwork for 30 years to these principles of appreciative inquiry, one of the things that we've learned is that there's no such thing as one vision or one purpose for a community. There's the whole purpose, which is made up of everybody's individual sense of purpose. And we might find where those are shared, but it's also so important to honor what makes each of us different at the same time. It's not an either or, it's a both and. And at that Cleveland Summit this last year, when we started the day by saying, "Why are you here?" I will never forget that the first three individuals that chose to grab the microphone, interestingly, were all students. And that's a whole other conversation in the power of intergenerational conversations. But one of the students stands up and says, "I'm here because there's things about this city that I want to fix and I want to see changed." And then the next student stands up and says, "When I walk to school every day, I walk by abandoned properties. And I would love to see these properties turned into playgrounds and gardens." And Michelle, what's fascinating to witness is when people are given a voice to say, here's why I'm here. What happens, and I don't have a full explanation for this, but I've seen it and experienced it, is in that moment in real time, it's a micro moment that creates a macro movement in that the whole room doesn't have a choice. It's just this unconscious contagiousness where when these young people stand up and say this, or the third person was a woman who stood up and said, "I'm here because years ago, my fiance at the time, who was in a wheelchair, was wheeling himself to a bus stop to take our public transportation, and the streets had not been plowed correctly. And because of that, he was in a tragic accident that ended his life." Now, I want you to think for a minute. In that moment, when 400 people hear that woman's purpose for being there, what happens is her purpose and the statement of the students before her, it becomes a part of everybody's purpose. And so let's make this practical. When someone steps into a meeting, and we do this all the time, one of our favorite questions to ask is, why is this task? Why is this project? Why is this meeting? Why is this team? Whatever it is that's at hand, why is this important to us? And now, while that can sound simple and obvious, we find that oftentimes in the workplace, the stress and the speed of the environments that we work in can cause us to want to get too analytical, too left brain, too task focused, too quickly. Whereas if we just pause for just a second, as a friend Mo McKenna says, when we pause a machine, it turns off. When we pause people, they turn on. And when we pause and we ask a question like, why are we all here? And we just let everybody share their responses. We immediately connect with what's shared amongst our purpose. And we learn how to appreciate what's unique about why we're all here. And then we can move forward. So that's an example where a manager, a leader can take appreciative inquiry and they could just bring one question. Why are we here? Or what's working? And spreading stories of what's working. Or what do we want? What do we want our future to look like? What are our wishes? It doesn't have to be a big summit. Just a question here and a question there that's unconditionally positive, that connects our voices, can be really, really magical. And we believe in that.
Playing with ways to apply appreciative inquiry in business practices was one of my very favorite things to do when I was studying with David during the Masters of Applied Positive Psychology. And at the time, I was at PricewaterhouseCoopers, so an auditing firm where there's not a lot of appreciation for strengths generally, more the deficits. But I was amazed as a leader from, you know, just changing my team agendas to always start with appreciative questions. So instead of the list of tasks, I started thinking about what were the questions that were appreciative in nature, things that looked for the true, the good, and the possible, as David describes it, that I could shape that conversation around. I ended up teaching our partners, our auditors, the four Ds, the discover, dream, design, and deploy steps of appreciative inquiry, to help them have better sales conversations with their clients. So instead of being technical experts all the time, they might connect a bit more as human beings to what was good in each other. It was actually amazing once I started using that appreciative lens, even in a workplace that looked really difficult to apply these ideas, just how many small ways you could use these practices. So I love that that's part of what you're teaching in the certificate. I do have to ask, though, because it's a question I get a lot, is there a danger in applying this appreciative eye to most things? You know, how do we get the balance right between what is working, but also make sure there's room for the conversations that aren't working? So I'm fascinated, John. What advice do you give business leaders on that front?
Yeah, well, I think it's like anything. Appreciative inquiry, I believe it is a philosophy. It's also an approach, and some might choose to use the word. It's a tool that can be used. And the only reason I like that metaphor or analogy of a tool is because it's a great reminder that it doesn't mean we know how to use the tool, or there's ways to have a tool in my hand but not know what to do with it. And certainly, I had a conversation just a few days ago with an emerging, growing business with an incredible potential in healthcare. And the founders were asking us about facilitating a strategic planning summit. And one of the founders, and I really respect that he said this, and he admitted in the middle of our conversation, he said, I've got to be honest, I'm not used to giving up control. I'm not used to inviting all these voices in. And what he realized, and I really respect that he was willing to acknowledge this in front of his peers, was that this approach, it will only work if the management or the leadership is of a paradigm where they really want to give fuel and energy and to listen to the voices of those that they work with and lead. And so that's just one example where it doesn't work if managers or leaders want to follow the old-fashioned paradigm of, you know, their job is to have the answers and everyone else should fall in line. I'll also add this, that we get a common question that you touched on a second ago, which is, well, how do we create space to talk about what's not working? And I have seen environments where the way appreciative inquiry was somehow introduced, or I'll say interpreted, was that there's no space to talk about these problems. And so therefore, people dismissed the approach altogether. And I can understand, I might too, if I was in their shoes. The way that we like to look at it is that appreciative inquiry, it's certainly not about ignoring problems. It's a different way of working with problems. It's a different lens. And I find that it's very important that it's introduced in this really grounded way, grounded in reality, that there might be some tensions and problems that are vying for people's psychological energy so much so that we have to address those. What we encourage groups that we work with to discover with us is that they really have two choices. And they could take the deficit approach, where the questions are questions like what's wrong, what's broken, what's missing, what's not working. And if we're not conscious of it, if we get stuck in those questions, you know, we might get really smart about how we got here, but we might also be ignoring the downside to what that's doing to our relationships, our ability to think and work together. And we now know so much about what happens in the brain when we sit in those questions. So what we encourage groups to explore is if they walk up to us and say, hey, well, we've got a problem with XYZ, we say, great. Are you willing to ask this question? Have we ever been great at XYZ? Where are we good at XYZ? Have we ever seen anybody else who's any good at it? Maybe we've never been, but can we look outside of our organization? And one that everybody can put energy into is, what could it look like for us to be exceptional at XYZ? That's a simplified example of flipping or reframing the problem, not running from it or avoiding it. And so I find that it has to be honored, the realities of what happens in an organization, and not introduced as something that allows us to ignore these challenges, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And I think, you know, another part to that that David gave me that I found so powerful in an auditing firm was the idea that when I was encountering people who just wanted to talk about the negative or what wasn't working and, you know, they were fixated in that mindset, he reminded me that my job in those moments wasn't to defend appreciative inquiry as an approach or a tool, but actually to remember that behind every cynic is an unexpressed hope. Mm-hmm. And that for me was such gold to know that when I'm in those conversations, actually my job is to get more inquisitive about what is the hope perhaps that's sitting behind that fear or that limitation or that deficit mindset, and to use the appreciative inquiry tools of discover, dream, design and deploy to actually have an appreciative inquiry conversation with that person to try and figure out, well, what's sitting behind that? And exactly to your point, okay, well, when that happens, has worked in any small way in the past for us or others, what does that look like? And if we could do that more here, what are you hoping for? What does success look like for you? And how are you thinking we could move from here to there then, based on what you know of our organizations or the concerns that you've got? And often in those moments, I found we're really not that far apart. We might be using different language. We might be starting from different places. They might have some great insights to add in that I had completely missed to my thinking about the pathways or how we could deploy it. But actually, then it becomes our shared plan by the end of those conversations. And so often when I find there's that resistance perhaps to the tool, it's that reminder of David's voice in my head of going, Michelle, behind every cynic is an unexpressed hope, and how do I tap into that? So John, are you ready for the lightning round?
I'm ready. That sounds like fun. Let's do it.
If we take appreciative inquiry as a given, I'm wondering what other well-being insight, tool or practice has made the biggest difference in your own life and why?
I think there's two that come to mind, and I guess they might connect to each other. One of them is that I have a regular mindfulness practice, and I credit my training in that area to unified mindfulness, which was created by Juliana Ray and Shinzen Young 40 plus years ago. So that's certainly how. I'm also a parent of three young children, so I need all the help I can get to stay sane. But I credit my wife, who really does the harder work there. And so a mindfulness practice is really important for me. And I would add to that, Michelle, I spend a lot of time in nature. I'm very fortunate that we live really close to a beautiful national park, Cuyahoga National Park, and I spend a lot of time in the middle of the woods, trail running, sitting, standing, walking. And that really helps me to stay sane and stay humble and connected to wisdom that I don't know that I understand all the time, but it really seems to help me out.
I hear you completely. For me, it's the beach at the end of my street, but I need to see that horizon regularly. John, if there was a book you'd recommend when it comes to bringing out the best in people in workplaces, what would it be?
There's two or three that I regularly like to recommend. One of them is a book called Conscious Business by Fred Kaufman. And I know I'm going to incorrectly state this, but I believe he is the director of the Conscious Business Institute at MIT. I could be wrong. But that book is a fantastic book at understanding, and this is my interpretation, the role of values in the workplace. And it's such a practical look at how do we align our behaviors with our values, which Fred teaches is the ultimate, is what he calls success beyond success. And there's some insights in that book around having conversations that I find so fundamental. If there's one more that I would recommend, I'm a big fan of Dana Zohar's work in spiritual capital. And in a nutshell, my best effort to share what I love about it is she introduces the idea of motivations and what motivates us, and that when we look at a human system, that if we think of it as levels of intelligence, we have IQ and then EQ. Well, what Dana introduces is SQ, spiritual intelligence, which, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but it's the ability to identify with a deeper meaning or purpose or what we value. And I love thinking about that because that's a lot of the times when we go into a team or organization, what we might not say it, but what we're really aspiring to is, can we elevate or evolve what's motivating that whole system, which is easier to say than it is to do. But Dana has some fantastic models that help us to understand that there's principles that govern what would be called a complex adaptive system. So when I'm walking through nature, I'm always asking the question, what can this forest teach me? Right, about life and the world and the work that we do. And it always has a great answer for me. But there seem to be these governing principles like gravity that are always at work. And Dana Zohar's work does a great job of talking about understanding the role of these principles and helping us to evolve or elevate what's motivating us as a system. So there's a couple books I'm a big fan of.
Sounds great. I'm going to go and check those out. And John, lastly, there's one thing you wished everybody thought about when it comes to bringing out the best in themselves and others in workplaces. What would it be?
Well, I think I said earlier that through the work that we've had the privilege to do, that we're always in awe of the potential that groups have, communities of all types, to shape their future together. And I would just hope that people know that regardless of their circumstances or context or environment that they're in, that there's incredible potential. And I guess I would add to that, that, you know, somebody said this at our recent fourth global forum for business as an agent of world benefit. In fact, it may have been the very first moment early in the meeting when we handed the microphone over to somebody in the room. And the question we had asked of 300 to 400 participants from 40 countries was, they shared stories of moments when they saw what we called flourishing enterprise. And we had them mine for themes amongst those stories and moments. And Michelle, I'll finish with this, that the first person that stood up and shared, she shared a story about a woman that she worked with or knew who had taken one small action to help one refugee from Syria. And that one action led to a small group, which led to a community, which the ripple effect was that one person had led to, it was something like tens of thousands of refugees to be taken care of. And the lesson from that moment was to recognize that oftentimes a macro movement begins from a micro moment. Those were their words. And it stuck with me, and I haven't forgotten about that phrase. And I think it's a fantastic reminder for any of us who have influence or a desire to influence positive changes, that the most grand macro movements all begin with micro moments, moments of trust, of connection, of appreciation, of contribution. So I'll leave it with that.
I think that's a great observation. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Michelle. It's a pleasure.
And thank you for listening. For more information on John's wonderful work, be sure to check out his TEDx talk and visit leadtoflourish.com. That's lead2flourish.com to learn more about his wonderful certificate program in appreciative inquiry and see some of the incredible case studies that his team have been working on. And as always, we'll put those URLs in the show notes for you. You've been listening to Making Positive Psychology Work with Michelle McQuaid. To grab your special Making It Work cheat sheet from today, podcast and some of the tested practical ways you can apply John's ideas for an appreciative eye in your workplace, simply visit michellemcquaid.com/podcast59. That's michellemcquaid.com/podcast59. And if you'd like to perform a random act of kindness today, then share this podcast with a friend or colleague to help improve our workplaces. After all, as Robert Gallagher wisely said, change is inevitable. Except from a vending machine. Until next time, take care.